I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE. Tomorrow, Donald Trump is set to host Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, whose kingdom has called out the UK-US EU armed genocide in Gaza and is refusing to normalize relations with Israel. This week also marks the anniversary of the assassination of US President John F. Kennedy, who, as Cy Hirsch revealed in the Samson Option, tried to push Israel to open up its Dimona nuclear weapons reactor for inspection, all while another secretive apparatus was already at work, Operation Gladio, NATO's clandestine terrorism network run with the CIA and MI6, was used to stage mass murder atrocities to be blamed on the left to prevent legitimate political parties from coming to power in Cold War Europe and opposing Washington imperialism in the global south. Today's guest believes Gladio never truly ended. Joining me now from Florida is Colonel Roxanne Tanner Watkins, a 30-year U.S. Air Force veteran who spent years tracing how those Cold War covert structures may still shape our world today. Colonel, thanks so much for coming on. Before we get to today's arguable Operation Gladios, Charlie Kirk onwards, remind me about the scale of CIA MI6 Operation Gladio Terror, of CIA MI6 operations, Italy, Belgium, France, Greece, West Germany, Norway, Sweden, Finland, Denmark, Holland, Turkey, Spain, Britain, all those countries now involved in supporting the proxy war on Ukraine, turning a blind eye to the war on Venezuela, and presumably which will back the war in Iran.
So just a little bit about Operation Gladio to explain to people. It's actually ran out of NATO, and it was a covert clandestine operation that you named many of them, all NATO-aligned organizations had to sign a secret agreement to create stay-behind units, i.e. Gladio units, in their country. And during my research into it, it took me about a year to sit back and realize, but the United States is a NATO country too. So where were our Gladio units? And when you start investigating terrorism as a mode of controlling domestic audience, Gladio is front and center. And so we don't find them just in Europe, though. They were used everywhere. They were used in Iran before we overthrew Mossadegh. They were used in Korea before the Korean War started. They were used in Vietnam by the French. It has been a mode of operation that literally no one talks about when they talk about military history. And most of geopolitical history, most of their use was to prep a battlefield and to have people on the ground to create false flags. And you start looking throughout our history at all of the false flags that we've had, and you begin to start seeing a network behind them. And Operation Gladio, which is a generic term, because the actual program in each of these countries were called something different. For example, in Portugal, it was called a Ginter Press. In Turkey, it was called the Grey Wolves. But the only country that did an in-depth study into what it was and revealed that it existed was Italy. Their program was called Gladio, and that's the reason why now, generically, we refer to the entire network as Operation Gladio.
And of course, Italy had the largest communist party in Europe after 1945. And to discredit the left, they would have these fake atrocities at railway stations that killed so many Italians.
Correct. And one of the things that I've discovered is the use of communist or communism became kind of a boogeyman attributed to the Soviet Union. When you do the research, you find in declassified CIA documents, for example, in Guatemala, they were really talking about labor efforts, which was often assigned to the left. I've stopped using the word left and right because it's completely has no use in modern day language. Because what you found in Italy, for example, is the communist party there was really coming out of a totalitarian government of Mussolini where all workers' rights had been abolished. And you have these labor efforts, which is oftentimes attributed to the left, organizing because there were a lot of international corporations in Italy. For example, I didn't know this, but the National Cash Register company had basically taken over all of the transactions in Italy during Mussolini. And the franchise owner was James Jesus Angleton's dad. So the Mr. CIA himself's dad owned, and they used it to spy on people because they could tell who was making money, who could be hit. If you had the national cash registers in your business, they had a complete intelligence network set up to be able to control finances in Italy. So again, the tentacles of this go so deep, and it really is orchestrated around what I have come to call the international syndicate, which is all of the oligarchs wanting to control all of us.
But it has been, and it has been successful right up to 2025, arguably. So that for people who can't comprehend why Western European populations are backing this suicidal war on Russia through Ukraine, I think you tweeted about the corruption, latest corruption scandal in Zelensky's Ukraine. It's because these elites can continue to control their population. They're to control. They're not to protect the countries from the Soviet Union or from Russia. They're to protect the societies themselves from being democratic.
Correct. Or nationalistic. If you care about your own country, Libya is probably one of the best examples. Omar Gaddafi cared about Libyans, and he cared about Africans in general. And what happened to him? Well, he was assassinated because he dared to defy the central banking system and rely on gold in his own oil. The same thing is true in Venezuela today. When you become nationalistic and you want to use your resources to enrich your people, you get killed. You get overthrown. And how do they do that? They do it with these Gladio networks and the intelligence agencies, and they deploy them. We did it in the Congo to Lumumba. He simply he wanted to use the uranium. At the time, the Congo was the world's largest source of uranium. Okay, it's post-World War II, early 1960s. They have the first time they're free from colonial empire in Belgium, and they elect him as prime minister. Well, he came to the United States and said, hey, I want to give you all of our uranium, as was the deal with Belgium, but I want to use the part that had gone to the Belgium government to enrich our own people. And the president at the time, Eisenhower, would not meet with him. The vice president, Richard Nixon, would not meet with him. He met with the Secretary of State, and they told him no. They said, you cannot cut out Belgium. So you're not going to have any money to build a school. You're not going to have any money to build your hospitals, you're going to get the same arrangement that you got before, which was basically nothing. And Patrice Lumumba said, forget it. Then I'm not going to honor that deal. And I'm sure the Soviet Union would be interested in uranium. And what happened to him next? He was murdered. He was murdered by Operation Gladio elements that Otto Skorzeny controlled, who was a Nazi, everyone knows that name, under Reinhard Gehlen's German intelligence, the BND. And so every prime minister, president that stands up for their country is a target from this international syndicate that wants to control all the world's resources.
Now, one can comprehend it from a strategic perspective if it is about somehow U.S. power dominance, U.S. empire. But as people of the MAGA movement through which Trump draws his strength are saying today is, but this power projection now seems to be being done not in recent decades, perhaps from much earlier, for anything to do with U.S. interests, but to do with Israeli interests. How did Gladio possibly become morphed into something that even James Angleston at the CIA back then might not have foreseen?
Well, actually, James Angleton, it's not coincidental that he sat at the desk that was the Mossad desk in the CIA and the Vatican's desk. He controlled both networks. And what I've come to appreciate is, if you go back in time to the creation of Israel, there's this greater concept called the strategy of tension that governs Operation Gladio. And it goes back to the late 1800s with the Fabian Society. Their idea was, if I create a left and a right, I can control everyone. So we create, and the same people funded New York City and the City of London, created the Bolshevik Revolution. They funded it. They created Hitler. They funded him. So now we have the proverbial left and right, communism and Nazism, right? And with that, for the next 100 years, we control everyone. What do they call Trump? He's a Nazi. What do they call Putin? He's a communist. So we have this strategy of tension that if I can put people in these different camps, I can pit them against each other. That's the reason why we have the left and the right, because it is a strategy of tension, of being able to control the people. It's like this master psyops. So what happened after World War II? We created Israel. Israel is, in my opinion, a strategy of tension concept. It controls the Middle East for these same people. Taiwan. Taiwan was Formosa after World War II. Where did we, and probably backing up just a little bit, how do you fund covert operations for Gladio? Because this is all done under the table. You fund them with drug networks. So we set up Chiang Kai-shek after World War II in Taiwan. It was actually called Formosa. He was the world's largest drug lord. He controlled over 80% of the opium trade in Asia. So that's how we're going to fund it. He had his own OSS detachment during the war, Paul Helliwell. Paul Helliwell goes on to form Castle Bank. He becomes part of the CIA. He's the guy that bought all the property for Disney in Central Florida using front companies. So you see these same characters throughout this entire historical research of them kind of pulling all the puppet strings. So if we're funding it with drug trafficking covertly, and we're doing all of these covert operations around the world, Israel is, so Taiwan is a pivotal friction point, strategy of tension in Asia. Israel is a strategy of tension focal point in the Middle East. Those are two of the most resource-rich areas in the world. We have Colombia, which was designated as that central point in South America and Central America, and you find the same players every single time. So did most of your audience may not know, but Israel and the UK, MI6, was integral in setting up Colombia as part of the Crystal Triangle. They were all involved in setting up the opium trade in Asia, and the City of London is responsible for setting up Israel. So again, you see this geographical map of, I can control all of the oil in the Middle East by setting up Israel.
Colonel Roxanne Tanner-Watkins, I'll stop you there. More from the 30-year U.S. Air Force veteran after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with Colonel Roxanne Tanner-Watkins, host of the Colonel's Corner podcast. Colonel, in part one, I interrupted you while you were talking about the centrality of Israel in massive elements of Operation Gladio-style activity. Can I just bring us right up to today and what you thought when you saw the assassination of Charlie Kirk on video, live-streamed, someone essential to the grassroots movements that brought Trump to power? killed just after he had said no choice but to leave the pro-Israel cause, so we know an Israeli motive. What did you think about that assassination?
So I think it's part of a bigger, obviously, there is vested interest in Charlie Kirk. His whole persona was getting people to talk to each other, people that wouldn't ordinarily talk to each other. He was not afraid to take any question and cut through the proverbial left and right conversations. The one thing that this apparatus that they've set up cannot have is us talking to each other. And there are multiple motivations going into Turning Points USA. And I think more importantly, the current Gladio rests on student youth movements around the world. The Albert Einstein Institute had a mechanism, Optor in Serbia, and we all are familiar with George Soros' funding of those operations. But that college age level is where both Mossad, MI6, and CIA recruit the foot soldiers. Charlie Kirk was an Achilles heel to their entire effort because he was rational and he got people to have conversations together. Every person in our history, a great example of that is a guy by the name of Fred Hampton. He set up during, noticed you mentioned JFK. In the 1960s, he set up a thing called the Rainbow Coalition that had lower income people all communicating, whites, blacks, Hispanics. The FBI assassinated him. And they do that because they do not want people who have large movements of people coming together. Because if we come together as a society, as humanity, they're dead. They lose all strength. And so regardless of who actually pulled the trigger, they will not allow anyone who promotes unity to last very long. And I think that's what happened with President Trump as well.
Except that there's a larger coalition now in the United States. I mean, the majority is opposed to Israel, according to recent polls after the genocide. And, you know, the New York Times here, hard choices, the Sulzberger family's paper, hard choices and unease over U.S. food benefits. 42 million, of course, facing hunger in the SNAP program pause during the government shutdown. What happens when you get that scale of poverty and immiseration? Of course, we don't know the budget of the CIA, and we don't know how much the Gladio B program, which is currently being run, costs, or the war in Iran, how much that will cost, or the cost of the sending the largest warship in the world, the Gerald Ford, to the Caribbean to threaten Venezuela is. What happens when the people themselves are rebelling, it seems, on the ground, or are that poor?
So I would argue that, number one, the 42 million people is grossly exaggerated because a significant portion of that number are here illegally, regardless of what our government says. But that is part of this strategy of tension, is to cut off funding for people to get them to rise up. There's two ways they do it. They do it by creating conditions for radicals to evolve themselves, but they also do planned, targeted radicalizations. And so by drumming up support or resistance against the government or whatever, that is part of this operation. And I would argue that's the reason why the government was shut down for so long. They create the conditions that allow them to operate. I was actually very surprised that during that shutdown, we did not have a false flag, actually, based on historical use of them to get a groundswell of people to turn against their government. they did it several times in Venezuela throughout 2019 and 2020, and creating the ground, trying to, it didn't work, the groundswell against Maduro. And we all know, we can see that it's simply because the companies in the United States want his oil.
Yeah, it must be emphasized that they fail many times. They do fail, but ultimately they appear to succeed, ultimately.
And so, over 400 attempts to overthrow governments that I've been tracking, and 90 successful coups that I've documented.
Yeah, I mean, so far the revolutions in West Africa seem to have been continuing rather successfully in overthrowing French colonialism, it has to be added. But of course, there's another figure here, and there are occasional news stories since World War II that seem to give us some kind of light. What did you make of the Jeffrey Epstein revelations as they filter through to us? Ari Ben-Menashe, who was a translator at Amal, the military intelligence at in Israel, told us on this show that they had something on Trump, and now more information is coming through about it. Do you think it's through those kinds of revelations that the public at large will be shocked enough to overthrow this oligarchic power as it tries its false flags and its sowing of continuous chaos to make profits?
So my opinion is that if they had something on Trump, we would have seen it a lot sooner, like concrete. But understand the Epstein, how it fits into this greater. I used to fashion Operation Gladio kind of as a wheel that used human trafficking and drug trafficking and weapons trafficking as funding sources. But in order for a wheel to operate, you have to have grease. You have to have grease on the axle in order for it to continue rolling down the road. Blackmail is the grease that makes the entire thing operate. So if you don't have blackmail on people, none of this operation works. You have to be able to control people who occasionally have information that they're kind of queasy about and go, you know, I don't really think we ought to be killing that guy. So you have to have blackmail in order to be able to control this entire operation. And I think people like Jeffrey Epstein was that. And every country will have their own. I mean, Marc Dutroux in Belgium was one of the masters at using children and all kinds of horrific things. And so it's not hard to imagine how these operations, several of them were found in the UK as well, because it's a global hub. Any place they have large areas of men, primarily men, traveling alone for meetings, you are going to have blackmail organizations working in order to be able to either knowingly or unknowingly, because there's been instances. One-star general was discovered as being with someone underage when it got exposed. I'm not going to recall his name right off my top of my head, but he killed himself once it was exposed. The story afterwards was that he had been drugged and set up, but had done whatever they needed him to do in the meantime in order to not have those pictures revealed. So,
I mean, obviously nothing is proven in any of these cases, which is why they're covert in the first place. But I better quickly, as we're running out of time, just get your opinion then of, I mean, I have to be careful on this show about it, but there's an ex-Israeli 200 unit spy running a pro-Israel propaganda unit called PragerU. And Alexis Wilkins works there, and she's suing. She happens to also be Kash Patel, the head of the FBI's girlfriend. She's suing people for alleging that she is a spy for the Israelis. Do you see the Israeli power over the Trump administration as strong as it was over the Genocide Joe administration, despite Trump's best efforts, or perhaps worst efforts, perhaps J.D. Vance's efforts, given that Trump is pretty open the way he talks about his support and funding for Miriam Adelson, from Miriam Adelson?
I found it very intriguing that he called her out in public for the funding, right? when he was at the signing recently, he told the entire world. And a lot of people were shocked by that, that he just openly admit that she funds all kinds of these things. I think it actually goes much deeper than that, though. What I was shocked at is how often Israel does come up in these Gladio research. For example, the IDF created a one-year school for people in Latin America to attend that were managing drug networks. You have Israel as the cutout for this Reagan administration sending missiles to Iran. You have Israel as the cutout to send weapons to Angola when President Reagan was trying to overthrow the government there through South Africa. They are intricately involved in all of this. I'm sure you're aware throughout Africa, the mining of diamonds. How did Israel become the biggest seller of diamonds when they don't own a single diamond mine? So they are intricately involved in this entire network, much more so than I would have ever imagined when I started this project 3 years ago. They are intricately involved in all of it. And so it's very troubling anytime you have Israeli support for a politician, because they obviously have a lot of pull when it comes to the funding of them.
Colonel Roxanne Tanner Watkins, thank you. That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those bereaved by the UK-US-EU armed genocide continuing across Palestine. We'll be back on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch. Follow all our social media if it's not sent in your country. And head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.